Time to begin. Really good to see the good number here tonight. We have a very large number joining us by Zoom as well, and we're glad for that option. We appreciate those being a part of this. This is going to be the last outline. We'll go at least another week, and maybe we could have questions and some things and go further. And tonight we're going to look into darkness. We're going to try to imagine what it would have been like to live in the first century and deal with demon possession. It's quite interesting as you read the scripture. Sometimes we read over it, you know, factually this happened. But then to try to really think of what it was like. And I think there's things we can gather tonight from the points we're making. There's just a lot of facts we're going to be looking at. But I do believe within those facts there's some things that ought to make us alert and aware. And so one of the themes that we've had throughout the study is that this unseen realm is something God wants us to see. And I think, if nothing else, these studies has made us more aware of the number of verses, Old and New Testaments, of angels in particular, but then in the New Testament as well as the Old, but more in the New, we read about demons. And so there's this unseen world. And so this is somewhat of a review, but going back to Ephesians 6, we are to view our battle spiritually with dealing with both seen and unseen realm. That the things that we see right now, sometimes we think the political realm is the greatest battle going on. And it's a battle, but it is a tiny little spot compared to the big battle. And Ephesians chapter 6, beginning in verse 11, the Bible says, "Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." Remember, we talked about this earlier. The biggest battle, and I've got a lesson I'm debating on my next series what to do, whether we deal with deception or whether we deal with a study of the place and role of the apostles. But the devil has ways of making you think, of appealing to you to think, that eventually will cause you to stop thinking. And he says, "Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." And one of the problems we face today, brethren, is we are prosperous. There is no country that has existed in history that has been as prosperous as us. We have good health. We have comfort. We have so many things. But guess what? We can become arrogant and we become blind. Just because we have things doesn't mean that we really are the place we need to be in the spiritual battle. We could be behind enemy lines. We could be captured by the enemy. And we need to be aware there's a spiritual battle. And we need to be focusing on putting the whole armor of God and working in our thought process and our character. And so tonight, if nothing else, I want to make us be aware that we can't underestimate the evil of Satan. Now, I'll tell you, I see the evil of Satan at times. When we have loved ones that get caught under his realm and they cut everybody off. And they go crazy. That's the thing that reminds me we live in a world for where there's a battle. And with God's help, put on the whole armor of God, we'll be fine. But we become arrogant and lazy. The evil of Satan cannot be underestimated. Jesus actually framed the battle that he had as he was knowing he was coming to the cross. This is last week of his life when he makes this statement. And I'm sure the apostles didn't get it when he first said this. But he says, "I will no longer talk much with you, for the ruler of this world is coming and he has nothing in me." Jesus knew the battle. Jesus did not let his guard down. He didn't take satisfaction in the amount of things that he had or people patting him on the back or even the people that were his enemies. He knew the battle was with Satan. And he knew the battle was in his heart and his mind. And if we could see as Jesus sees, again, this study, we get a glimpse in the unseen realm, and I think it helps us. And so tonight, we're going to focus in on demon possession. And I'll have to tell you, the cumulative reading of these verses and trying to imagine what it would be like is helpful. Imagine, and we're going to see tonight, of having a child possessed by a demon from childhood and having that for many years. Imagine having a close relative of yours, or maybe your own mate, or maybe your own children, or maybe as they're adults, to have a spirit speak within them that's not them. And there's nothing you can do about it unless you go to the right source. And so these are the things that I want us to see. This was horrible. It's unimaginable. And that's why I want us to think about it. What would have been if we had a loved one that was demon-possessed? Or in this case, suppose you were demon-possessed. You still would have a will. You would have alertness, but you wouldn't have control. Mary Magdalene, we're going to read about her, that she had seven demons cast out of her. And man, when that happened and she knew who the Lord was, she was going to be first, you know, there, last at the cross and first at the garden, you know, because she understood the nature of this realm and the power and the evil forces. And she understood who Jesus was. And so there was a purpose in all of this, and we'll develop this. I do believe. Let's look at Mark 16. I don't have it in the outline, but as we study demons and demon possession, let's just remember. Really, I think the purpose of demon possession ultimately was to let people see. Mark 16 was to let people see the unseen realm, and also to see who you need to go to hear. And let's look at Mark 16, 17, and 18. And who would like to read that? Mark 16, 17. Okay, Martin?
These signs will accompany those who have believed in my name. They will cast out demons. They will speak with new tongues. They will pick up serpents, and if they drink any deadly poison, it will not hurt them. They will lay hands on the sick, and they will recover.
And then notice verse 20, if you would.
Okay, verse 20. And they went out and preached everywhere while the Lord worked with them and confirmed the word by the signs that followed.
So it's very interesting here. Demon possession was one of various signs. And this was a sign that got people's attention. Now, if you had a loved one who had demon possession, you were seeking, seeking, seeking. And the only people you could go to would be the ones who had this power. The apostles and potentially those who they laid hands on that had that gift. And certainly we would know that Jesus could. And that in itself spoke. God's power is found here. You may ought to listen to these people. Not that you must listen to these people. But the people who got caught up in demon possession, they already understood, man. This is a battle. This is a battle they're utterly helpless against. They could not overcome. They needed help. And you see, in our arrogant world, and even for us, we need to understand how much we need help. And the power of God that we have. So now we've got just a bunch of facts here we're going to look at tonight. And I think we can draw some conclusions from these facts. So let's go. We're going to have different reading tonight. So if you're willing to read, we'll just kind of go along here with the class. And before we just do the reading, let me just mention demon possession is where a spirit being controls another person. That person has a spirit. The demon is a spirit. But the person who should be in control of the body is not in control of the body. And there are various effects that it has on the body. And the one who could speak is the demon. And so, let's look at, we're going to look at, there's at least 26 instances in the New Testament where we have demon possession recorded. And another thing I want to mention to you, that it's not just illness. You have some things described as illnesses. Of somebody having epilepsy or having seizures. And sometimes the demon went along with those things, but sometimes you had demon possession, and then you had those other things that people could be healed by. So there's some people, like if they do not believe in the inspiration of scriptures, they would say, oh, people were confused in the first century. There was no such thing as demons. People just had some physical ailments, and people took it as demon possession in their ignorance. So that's not our crew tonight. We don't believe that. And I'll show you that there's demon possession and then there's the physical characteristics, sometimes caused by the demon possession and sometimes not. And so so let's look at a few verses. Mark 1:34. And how about Tammy, if you mind, if you read it, would like to read that.
1:34.
Mark 1:34.
And he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he did not allow the demons to speak because they knew him.
Now notice, there's two actions being taken here. Is he just casting out demons? What would be four demons? What's he doing? He's healing the sick with various diseases. So all I would point to you, there are diseases, and then there's demon possession. Sometimes there are certain diseases associated with demon possession, but they're not the same thing. And so that's important here to try to answer the skeptic who says, oh, demon possession simply... And by the way, let's say back years ago I had the measles, back in the old days. And you know what? When I had the measles, there wasn't some voice that spoke out of me, you know, talked to my mama that wasn't me. You know, having a disease doesn't mean you have somehow some spirit within you that then can talk. So I'm telling you, there's the disease and then there's demon possession. So that's the point I want to make here. That those that are trying to claim that it's just diseases, that's not correct. Okay, Chris, how about Matthew 4:24?
Then his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought to him all sick people who were afflicted with various diseases and torments, and those who were demon-possessed, epileptics, and paralytics, and he healed them.
So it's interesting here. Again, the same thing. Demon possession is one category of many. But could I say this? And those of you who were at Lake Anna, I did my lesson, which I'll eventually do here. Y'all forget it in time, I'm sure. But on the audience at Pentecost. And how Jesus, for 3.5 years of his ministry, he'd go somewhere and anybody that needed to be healed was healed. Anybody who needed demons cast out, he went all different places. You not think that that wouldn't be spread around and people know about it? And that's why Peter could stand up in Acts chapter 2 and he talked about in Jesus who worked miracles among you, you know, you that you yourselves also know. Even the enemies recognize Jesus worked miracles. There was a powerful effect over 3.5 years. The common person would have known Jesus had power over demons. He could heal all. And again, that had an effect for people to be willing to listen to Jesus. He's trying to get Jews to leave Judaism, in essence. I mean, to go to the fulfillment of Judaism. There had to be powerful signs. And that was done throughout the ministry of Jesus and then through the apostles as well. And so these are very powerful signs. Because, you know, Chris, about us guys, let's say we've got a problem. What do we want to do when we've got a problem? Let's say we've got a problem with a car. It's got an issue. What do we want to do immediately?
Try to fix it ourselves.
We want to fix it ourselves. Yes, not necessarily follow the instructions. Yeah, there's some other man things there that we've got to include. But we won't wait around. At least I don't. Let's go fix it now. Now imagine having a problem and nobody can help you, and it's serious. You've got a loved one with a demon. You got to figure out how to fix it. And you got fakes and frauds. But eventually you hear a message. There's only one place you can go. And we read about that woman who had a daughter seriously demon-possessed, and she did her research, and she knew in the life of Jesus, there's only one way that the demon was going to come out. And man, she wasn't going to go home. Without her daughter being healed from that demon possession. Yeah, there's power in what God is doing here. Julie, how about Luke 8, 2?
And certain women who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities, Mary called Magdalene, out of whom had come seven demons.
Now, here's another aspect. Again, I can't give you answers here. I can't. What's it like to have seven demons? I mean, once it would just be overwhelming. How about the one that was, we'll read about him in a minute, that was in the tombs and they put chains on him. Why did the legion, what just happened? I'm about to give the answer now, but what did the demons say that their name was? Legion, for we are many. Seven demons. Again, I don't understand everything about that, but if it was me, y'all have to admit, I have some phobias. And I don't like being, I'm not claustrophobic, but I'm not real happy about being in dark, closed places. I cannot imagine what it would be like to have no control over my body. And to know these were demons from hell in control. There would be a terror. It would be inexplicable. And if somebody may ask, well, why did God allow this? I do believe God allowed this for the powerful signs. And in Mary Magdalene, was it good or bad that she was demon-possessed in the long run? It was good. Because you didn't have to tell her anymore. No more debate necessary for her. None necessary. This is the Son of God. And this is a battle I dare not be on the wrong side. Ah, good lesson learned. That's the lesson we need to learn in looking at this, okay? That's the lesson we want to learn. And let's talk about the varying effects of demon possession. Everybody, you put your hands out, all your fingers are there. Can you see? Can you hear? Of course, I got a little help here. Now, I still have a problem with the frequency of my wife. Well, I won't talk about that, the frequency of my wife not hearing that. Anyway, I think some men commonly have that issue. But now, imagine, suddenly, dramatically, this happening. You're not able to speak. Now, I'm going to tell one more wife-to-husband joke here. You know, a few times in bed has had laryngitis, particularly with kids in the home, and it was catastrophic. There were some times I had laryngitis, and it was 2 days before anybody noticed. So, but anyway, just a joke. Just a joke. That's not true. But it's just imagine suddenly not being able to speak. Let's give another verse here. And yes, Connie?
And they went out. Behold, they brought to him a dumb man possessed with a devil. And when the devil was cast out, the dumb spake, and the multitude marveled, saying, it was never so seen in Israel.
So here's a man who couldn't speak. Now, again, you may ask, well, is this not couldn't speak and demon-possessed, or is it the demon possession caused the muteness? And that's something we could debate. Because you'll see some demons that evidently specialize in certain elements, as we're going to see later. It's kind of interesting little things. But could you imagine? Here you are. One day, you can't speak anymore. What would that be like? I'll tell you what, if you're going to have demon possession, this would be a better one to have than some of the others. So let's go a little further. Let's talk about this one. Matthew 12:22. How about that?
Then one was brought to him who was demon-possessed, blind and mute, and he healed him. So that the blind and mute man both spoke and saw.
Okay. Now that's pretty significant. I guess as I get older and my body parts start failing, you know, I sometimes think about things. I'd feel really bad if I couldn't get out and walk. I would feel bad if somebody had to push me in a wheelchair. Of course, Emily told me the other day when we were in Washington, and Vet and I were limping along. You know, she had a back problem. My knee was hurt. You know, he said, I would just put you in a wheelchair, you know, push you. Now, she wasn't saying that, yeah, but that wasn't as severe as it sounded. But, you know, that's why we ended up getting those scooters going back, if y'all saw the pictures of it. So I didn't want to do 2.5 miles back that way. So, but now imagine this. You can't see. Just think about it. Boom. No more sight. And then you don't have control of your will. And you can't speak. I can remember, again, I know, I hope this doesn't get too this bad in terms of illustrations, but a close friend of mine had something happen in his surgery, drug reaction, that damaged a lot of his brain. And you really couldn't be sure you communicated with him. I remember his son saying, I think he wants to say something to me, but he can't. And I'm his son, and it frustrates me, it hurts me to be in that position where I'd want to help my dad. I want to hear something from my dad. Couldn't hear him. So again, I just want to make these things real. If you saw this, another one, Joe, how about Mark 9:25?
When Jesus saw that the people came running together,
You rebuke the unclean spirit, saying to it, deaf and dumb spirit, I command you, come out of him and enter him no more.
Now here's where it gets interesting, and I'll have to admit, I really hadn't noticed this that closely before until preparing for this time of teaching the lesson, that here the person couldn't speak and couldn't hear. But notice what the spirit is called. A deaf and dumb spirit. And that makes me think, well, do demons have specialties? You know, this one would specialize in taking away, you know, the ability to hear or speak. I don't know. I mean, y'all have any other translations that word it any differently? You know, that's an interesting description made here of a demon. So I don't think, if you do, you can just let me know. And you know, but I don't, what, you got something? Okay. All right. Okay. Now, here's another one. Now, of course, I know some people would, you know, if you had rationality, you probably could win the wrestling match. But you wouldn't play by the rules. You know, if you had this superhuman strength, problem is you had no control. Look at Matthew 8:28. And this is the one we talked about earlier. And we're going to be dealing with the same group. There's two mentioned, and then there's one in particular that had the great number of demons. But, Joni, how about Matthew 8:28?
Came to the other side of the country, the Gadarenes. Two demon-possessed men met him coming out of the tomb, so fierce that no one could pass that way.
Okay. So here's the place, guy living in the tombs. Now, I hear right now the rent rate in tombs are still okay. They haven't gone up a lot like, you know, in other places. So, yeah, living in the tombs is not exactly where you want to live. And it's interesting, if somebody went that way, this person came after you. And so what did people decide to do? Not go that way. Now guess what? They got posses after this guy. And they actually were able to capture this guy. I think we're dealing with the same one. Two is mentioned in one account. One in particular that's emphasized here. In Mark 5, Martin, verse 3 and 4.
Mark 5, 3 and 4. Who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one could bind him, not even with chains, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains. And the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him.
Okay. Who do you think of in the Bible that chains and shackles couldn't hold? Is there anybody else you can think of? Yeah. Samson. But he had control, at least to some point. He did lose control because of his own carnality that got him in trouble. But here's somebody, they not only had great power, the people that could capture him and put chains on him, and then he'd break the chains. And the idea that no one could tame him. You know what kind of clothing he wore? Probably none. And so, let's talk about this one. Mark 5, let's open our Bible to that. Just notice something about, this is a great account. Mark chapter 5. And we're going to be looking at different things about it. We could keep going a little further. I've got the New American Standard. I mean, New American Standard. Look at verse 5. I tell you what, go ahead, Martin. You read verse 5 since you got through 4.
Sorry.
Mark 5, 5.
All right.
Okay, I'll get it. That's fine. You go ahead.
I got
okay.
It right here.
All right.
Mark 5 and verse 5. Mm-hmm. Just one page away. Constantly, night and day, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gnashing himself with stone.
Okay. Now imagine this. Now, one of the things that we're able to do today, Martin and Craig. Craig's heading back home now. We did finish our filming of the commercials. And Martin, if we were there, let's say we were there on Carter's Mountain getting ready to film, and you've got somebody 30 yards away, a kid saying something, do we hear it?
We do. We did.
Yes. And then even at a distance, down the mountain, there was a siren go off and hear it. Now imagine, here you are, you're trying to go to bed at night and you sleep in this area. And here you got this guy in the tombs, cutting himself and crying out. Would it give you a real warm feeling? Talking about having the boogeyman out there. Like, whoa. Man, I hope he stays up there. Now imagine being this man. Let's keep the Bible open here. Let's just keep the Bible open here in Mark chapter 5. And we read about the man being cured of his demon possession. The demons cast out, going into the swine, by the way, and going to Israel and staying in Tiberias. We got to see, well, not just Tiberias, anyway, I get them convenient. We stayed there and went by boat across the sea to the place where that happened. It's very interesting. Look at the train and what happened there. But how about verse 15 and through 17, 15 through 17?
That same chapter?
Uh-huh. Okay, Mark 5, 15 to 17. Tahira, would you read that if you've got it?
And they come to Jesus, and see him that was possessed with the devil, and had the legion sitting clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it fell to him that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray him to depart out of their coast.
Okay, so here you got... You got a herd of swine now, so you pretty well realize this is not Jews, I wouldn't think. Here we've got a Gentile region. Or if it is Jews, they just learned a lesson, you know, about doing that. And swine, this is a big herd. And you have this big herd dead, drowned in the sea. And so here now, they knew this guy. And what do they see when they see this guy? Sitting at Jesus' feet, what? Clothed in his right mind. Then they see the dead swine. And what do? You think they're already caught up in fear? We're seeing this guy again, and now we've got this huge financial loss. This would be the equivalent of a major industry going under in that area. The loss of that big a herd of swine. And what do to Jesus? Go, go. Now, here's the amazing thing. This is humbling. But in Mark 5, what does Jesus do with the man that had been demon-possessed, that had the worst possible reputation you could have had of anybody? Look at verse 19. And he did not let him go with him. He was begging, "Let me go with you." And he said to him, "Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." And how successful do you think he would be? Well, here's a guy been running around naked in the tombs. We've been scared to death. And now here he is. Let's go hide the kids. You know, I'm sure it would have been difficult for him to get some traction. But of course, they would notice, like, wow, he's acting normal now. And you know one thing he would have? Would he have a message to say? If you had been in his shoes and you had been there, you think you want to live amongst the tombs? You think you liked everybody being afraid of you? Did you like, you couldn't go home? You couldn't go home anymore? And one thing he could say is that Jesus healed me. And you know what the town would say? I guess he did.
Yes. In the scripture, the last thing it says about us there is he went to the Decapolis and did that. And everyone was amazed.
Yes.
That's the same response the Samaritan woman got from Jesus after her conversation at the well.
Yes.
When he told her how many husbands she had had. And she went back to town and said, "He's told me everything I've ever done."
Yes.
And it says they were amazed.
Yes.
Right? And so it just kind of parallels.
Yes.
Here is the insight, the change that they saw in this woman.
Yes.
And the belief she had in what Jesus had done with her and this man.
Now, let's make another point here. We're getting ready to get into evangelism. Buckle your seatbelts. I realize we've got different abilities in teaching. We'll probably have people really working toward teaching and people doing other things. But could I say this? Each of us ought to have at least a minimal message that we could talk about. What was the demon-possessed man asked to talk about by Jesus?
Things that God had done for him.
What's that?
The things that God had done
for him. The great mercy he's done for you. And brother, if you can't have, you don't have that message, don't teach. We may need to convert you. That should be an overpowering message. And so they knew who this guy was. There's no questioning. They'd been probably, how long had he been demon possessed and up in that situation? I don't know. Could you imagine, again, living in those villages? We can't go down this path. Probably a warning. Crazy man up ahead, you got to go another way. And then somebody comes and says, oh, I'm going to worry about it. And they come back bleeding and hurt. Oh, man. You know, so, and now that's gone. And here he is. He's talking about God. See, demon possession. The power of the casting out. But also, again, think about being this guy. I think he would be just like Mary Magdalene, wouldn't you think? Rest of his life. And some have suggested, now what do they do with Jesus when they just initially they hadn't had time to think? They see this guy in his clothes standing before Jesus and the dead swine. Out of fear, they said, go, go. It has been suggested, and there may be some context that we could suggest this, that Jesus came back later, and guess what, when he would come back? It was just like the woman at the well. Whole town won't see him. And so again, interesting. That, to me, those things are interesting. All right, let's go back to darkness. Go back to darkness. Demon possession. Let's start over, Tammy. We'll start reading some verses here. Of course, I've got some longer reading here, so go ahead, if you would. Mark 9, 17 through 22. And so now let's say this is your child. Imagine this. This is your child being spoken of. Okay?
Then one from the multitude answered and said, Teacher, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. And wherever he seizes him, he throws him down. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast him out, but they could not.
We'll stop just for a moment. So, now here is occasion, I think this is after the Mount of Transfiguration, I think. And so Jesus is away for a few days, and he comes down, and it's like, you know, the apostles were the ones who were to cast out demons, and here they fail. And so, now we'll keep reading, Tammy. Verse 19, going on through 22.
He answered him and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me. Then they brought him to him, and when he saw him, immediately the spirit convulsed him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. So he asked his father, How long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood, and often he has thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us.
Imagine that. This is your child, and your child cannot really speak to you. You know this is a demon. He knew this was a demon. I don't know how he knew, but he talks about the demon, you know, trying to destroy the child. And not only was it sad to see the child wallow and foam at the mouth and become rigid, but you're near water, throw into the water. They drown. Near fire, jump into the fire. How do you live with that? What would you have to do to make sure your child doesn't kill himself? And the way this text sounds, it sounded like this had been a wow. From childhood. So again, as we look at this, if you had experienced or seen somebody deal with demon possession, it would have been one of the absolute horrors. You would not want it to happen to you or your loved ones. And if you hadn't, if they hadn't been around the apostles or Jesus, you would think there's no cure. That would get your attention. And so now here's a here's some more interesting things again. Yeah, y'all feel free. I know I'm kind of just kind of preaching here tonight, and I don't have a lot of questions to ask. You can make some observations. But Chris, let's do this next one. Here's an interesting one. Acts chapter 16, 16 through 18.
Now it happened as we went to prayer that a certain slave girl possessed with the spirit of divination met us, who brought her masters much profit by fortune-telling. This girl followed Paul and us and cried out, saying, "These men are the servants of the Most High God, who proclaim to us the way of salvation." And this she did for many days. But Paul, greatly annoyed, turned and said to the spirit, "I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her." And he came out that very hour.
Okay, this gets interesting. This is a demon, but it's just not just any demon. What kind of spirit is this woman possessed with?
Spirit of divination.
Anybody got a different translation of that? Is it translated any differently in any of your passages? Spirit of divination, Acts 16, 16.
I take that to mean one who can tell the future.
Or at least be able to give you answers that would be normally what people wouldn't be able to answer. Now, we don't have anybody that does divination today, do we? Now, back in the old days, what would you see if you were driving down the road and you wanted somebody that would be asked to claim to do this? Would you have a little sign, a little symbol? The crystal ball? You go down the road, you don't see them as often. You see them a lot back in my youth, and you would have this place, the fortune teller, the place you could go. And you know, some of these people are pretty good. It's interesting. Again, I'm getting off the path here a little bit, but not necessarily. I was reading a book, or at least audio book, about a guy that was talking about deception. And one of the things he did early in his life was hypnosis, and also claiming to read palms. And he talked about being a palm reader, and that he knew he had no power. But there's certain things you can do in talking to a person and appealing to a person. There's a certain way where you can make statements and general things that make a person think they know you exactly when you don't know anything. It's a form of deception. Even hypnosis is a form of deception, or a person has to be willing to go down a certain path. And it's interesting how the mind works. Satan is good at deception. The spirit of divination certainly would be a deceiving spirit. Would they have the actual power to see the future and tell it? I don't know. I do know about fake ones, what they do. And they can be really good. Matter of fact, again, I guess I may get into trouble, but I'll go ahead and talk about this. I've seen this done under the name of Christianity. I can remember a young man I studied with once, and he just maintained that he was healed of a certain issue by one of the faith healers. And you know what you found out later? You would go into the faith healer. They would ask what's wrong with you. If you had a headache or something, you're probably going to get something. You're going to get put to the top of the line. But he was having some kind of issues that you couldn't see. And what they didn't know is that was passed on to the faith healer. And so the faith healer goes, "I'm sensing something, and there's someone in the audience." And he kind of describes this person. "Oh, he knows me. He could read my mind." You know, this was deception. And because he got so excited about it, he was convinced he had been healed. And again, I won't go any further down that path, but there's a lot of ways you can manipulate a person to make them think that something happened and that you can read a mind when really you've played upon their own spirit. But now, this was a real demon. And now, the demon was very critical of Paul, was it? Was this demon very critical of Paul?
No.
But what did the demon say?
"He's near the service of the Most High God to proclaim to us the way of salvation."
Oh, well, look at this, man. Look, this is great advertisement, right? Let me say something. I'm going to throw something to you. I think there's an exception here. Have you ever known a demon that has been recorded speaking publicly in the New Testament not tell the truth? It's interesting. James says that demons, what? They believe and tremble, but they would see accurately what's right. I think there may be an exception, but it's interesting. Most of the times when demons do speak, I guess they would be allowed to speak by God. They spoke the truth. But here, Paul didn't want them to speak. And so what ends up happening when this woman's demon is cast out? She can't do her trickery. If it is a mirror, if she had the ability, she couldn't do that. But it's probably she didn't have the talent in trickery and deception. And then Paul ends up, you know, they took it out on Paul, and he ends up having some issues with the authorities. Again, going back to speech, and this is probably, we're getting closer to the end. The demon spoke. So eventually, I'm going to do a lesson here called Some Things in Hell That the Church Needs. Now, if you was to try to fill in that blank, what would you say? What would be some things in hell the church needs? Well, one of the things, really the thrust, is a recognition of reality. If we take the rich man and Lazarus, the rich man recognized, at least in torment and the sense he's in there, he recognized the importance of salvation, the importance of God's word, you know. And so, but so that was the thrust here. But guess what? We get a few voices from hell. Here's some voices from hell. Matthew 8:29. Who are we at on a reading? Let's see. Who's next? I forget. Chris?
I'll go
ahead. Okay.
And suddenly they cried out, saying, "What we have to do with you, Jesus, your Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time?"
Whoa, now look at this. Talking about perception. Things in hell the church needs. There are some words of demons that really reflect wisdom. What are the demons recognizing here? What does it mean? You've come to torment us before the time. Yes.
He's the judge, and
yes,
there will be punishment.
Yes. That's a pretty good thing to know. Now, they have no plan of salvation, and their time is gone. Same thing about the rich man. Once he lost, he was out of this body, his fate was sealed, it was done. And it's interesting, Luke 8:31, another one along the same line.
And they begged him that he would not command them to go out into the abyss.
Whoa, the abyss. Again, the book of Revelation, there's an abyss. Anybody want to try to tell me what that is? What's the abyss?
Well, in Luke chapter 11, in verse 24, it has, we have already referred to this story, after the Mount of Transfiguration, the disciples couldn't cast out this demon.
Yes.
Jesus does, and then as part of that, he says to them in explanation, "When the unclean spirit goes out of the man, it passes through waterless places seeking rest, and not finding any, it says, 'I will return to my house from which I came.'"
Okay.
So the idea of the abyss couples with this idea of waterless places. So whatever it is an absence of any place to reside or comfort for the demon to gain traction or substance.
Yeah, I don't want to get into too deep of stuff here, but there's evidently some comfort in demons being in a body. And the abyss could be the watery places. It could be the final abode. You know, the demons, again, we'll get into some things, but I think demons did not have this freedom long. You really didn't see it in the Old Testament. This is something that I think primarily occurred in this aspect in the ministry of Christ or the ministry of the apostles. That there comes a point where demon possession ended. And so there was a sense where the abyss could well have been the place that Jude 6 talks about, of where the angels are held in chains of darkness before the final judgment. So there's an aspect of, while they still have freedom to roam in the earth, there's a place they don't want to be, in watery places, rather be in a body. There's also a sense where those chains of darkness. And so there's an interesting, I know this is fascinating, but Jesus actually, it appears to me, for this moment, shows some mercy on the demons. That's an interesting thought. Now, God's love cannot extend to them to provide them fellowship with God, and they end up in the terrible place they're going to end up. But it's interesting here where Jesus did grant, if you could call it a prayer, for at least that it did. You know. Now the interesting thing here, though, you might say, well, they went to the swine. So how long did they stay in the swine? Not very long. Why? They went down to the water and drowned. So maybe they got the same thing either way. But it's interesting, just to note here. Another interesting thing, again, talking about some things in hell the church needs. Notice some things, and again, we're repeating some things already stated. But Matthew 8:29.
And suddenly they cried out, saying, "What have we to do with you, Jesus, you Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time?"
Basically the same verse, but notice what do they recognize. They recognize Jesus, Son of God. They recognize a place of torment. Okay? Matthew 25:41. This is not in the outline, but I felt like it needed to be in the outline. Joni, how about that? Matthew 25:41.
And he will also say to those on the left hand, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels."
So it's interesting here as you talk about the final abode. This is the final abode. Did you know that hell was not designed for people? That's interesting, isn't it? Hell was designed for the devil and angels, and God did not want any of us to go there. And so they recognized it. They admitted it. Admitted who Jesus was. Admitted His power. Admitted the judgment day. Very interesting. As we look at the wisdom of demons, if you want to call it that. Things they would admit. Here's another verse, very similar. Again, Mark 1:23-24.
"And there was a man in their synagogue with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, saying, 'Let us alone. What have we to do with you, Jesus of Nazareth? Did you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God.'"
So again, very similar statements, similar observations. I think I'm going to stop here in our readings. Do y'all have any discussion, any observation?
I have a question.
Okay.
So when he cast the demons into the swine and they go over the cliff.
Yeah.
What happens to the demons?
Well, they got to go to the watery places. They do not go to the first place. So Jesus' mercy was very briefly. You know, the place they got was very brief, and so they ended up not having a body to possess. Now, we haven't read some other verses, and I want to spend some time next week on this. But do you know what some possibilities are for demons when they get cast out of one place?
They go to another.
Yeah, they can go back to an old abode. And one of the things would be there was a possibility of somebody who had demons cast out by an apostle or Jesus. And then the demon comes home and guess what? Brings some friends. And we'll be looking at that next week. There's some very and some interesting questions we might raise. Who could be demon possessed? What are some implications about who gets demon possessed? I don't think everyone is guilty of sin that's demon possessed. We can talk about that because we've got a child. Again, depending on what child means, I think there are some innocent ones that evidently could be demon possessed. But there's also some implications that there is a lack of preparation, a lack of spirituality that could cause one to be vulnerable to demon possession. Some things to think about. Chris.
Okay. In Mark 5, verse 10, The demons beg that they not be sent out of the country.
Yeah.
And in looking at that verse, I thought to myself, okay, does that mean if they're sent out of the country, they have to go back to where they came from? You know, perhaps sooner than they want to. They've got to know that they're not going to be allowed to be here for very long. Okay. And we know that they were loose for a time.
That's a great question. Here's my suggestion, and this is interesting. Never thought about this. That question has provoked. Did demon possession occur in the whole world wherever men live throughout the whole globe?
At what time?
Yeah, the demon possession occur everywhere. Remember the purpose of demon possession? The purpose of demon possession was to allow to show the power of Jesus and his apostles. Would God allow someone to be demon-possessed without any possibility of remedy? I wouldn't think so. It's like we could argue today, could demon possession occur today? And we'll talk about that next week too. We'll talk about the cessation of demon possession. But I believe that whenever God allowed demon possession to occur, He also allowed there be a possibility of a remedy where somebody could have the demon cast out and then they could hear the message they needed to hear. And so possibly here that the demon possession may have really occurred within a restricted area in the ministry of Jesus and the apostles. And that could be the possible explanation. And in essence, though, leaving the country would be going to the watery places, would be, you know, going to some other place without possession, or maybe even to the abyss. I don't know. There's a possibility there. There's a realm in which demons were allowed to possess. But that was a realm, and maybe that's what country means there. Excellent question. I want to do some more study on that.
There's a second part to this now.
Okay.
The abyss, since those who will be judged unrighteous in heaven,
yes,
are going to be swept into the same place reserved for Satan and his devil and his demons.
Right.
Could it be what is referred to in Revelation as the fiery furnace?
I think the lake of fire. The lake of fire, yes. Now deep south would be the lake of fire, but anyway, just a little humor there. Okay. Got some more. Think of those questions. We could get into a third lesson out of this if we get enough questions and discussion. But it makes you think. But again, the point I want us to get tonight, Satan is terrible. The unseen realm is real. There couldn't be higher stakes in this battle. And we need to understand what really matters. Let us stay within the protection of God. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Thank you for your participation tonight. Thank you for those who participated online.